comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. You matter, and you have a right to know. In keeping with the fact that we firmly believe that you do have the right to know, we publish something each week called the K-Files. It is our free weekly newsletter, and it's good. And if you're not subscribed, you need to do so. There's no genius in sitting in the dark when you don't have to. And it's free. So just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click where you see right in the middle of your screen, great big word that says K-Files. Click that. Subscribe, and you'll get an email with an activation link in it. And you need to use that link to activate your subscription, and you're good to go. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. We don't rent, loan, lease, sell, or in any other way distribute our list of email addresses to anyone for any purpose. It is solely for the use of the K-Files. If you're not a member yet, you really ought to become a member because it's not that expensive. In fact, it's not expensive at all, period. It's $6.95 for the whole month. And that opens to you a lot of doors. It gives you access to the archives. You get to watch the shows live. It's free to listen, but you get to watch. And you get to see the pictures and videos we talk about. If you happen to miss the show, well, we capture it and load it up on the website, and it's up there for the next 24 hours. So within the next 24 hours, you can watch what you missed. Of course, the archives, the podcasts of the show, those are up there, I guess, forever. Hey, if you're not a member, why not join right now, and then you'll get to see the rest of the show, and you'll get all the goodies that are in there, chat and forums and the video galaxy and the library of free ebooks and all that. Okay, we did some shows last week. I did some shows about this thing up next to the sun. And you may remember that it was had to do with the Core 2A camera, which is not run by NASA. It is run by the Naval Research Laboratory, and there's a group within that, a project within that, called SECCHI, S-E-C-C-H-I. That's who runs it. And but NASA put up on their website an explanation that I said I don't buy. Now, we're going to step away for a break here. And when we come back from this break, I'm going to talk a little bit about that explanation for why we're seeing something up there next to the sun. I'm going to talk briefly about that in terms of emails that I got, and then our guest is going to join us. Our guest is James Horak, and I guarantee you he will say something tonight controversial. I know him personally. Even in private conversations, he's a controversial guy. But he's a good guy. And so we're going to hear from him. He says it's not what you think it is. We'll be back right after this. All right. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening is someone familiar to our audience. Those of you who have been listening to this show for any length of time are certainly familiar with Mr. James Horak, and he is my guest this evening. And I will bring him, he's on the line with me, and I'll bring him on air here in just a second. The first thing I want to do, though, is kind of set the stage a little bit for what we're going to be discussing this evening. As you know, I mentioned at the top of the show, these shows that I did last week, a couple of shows, where I talked about this thing next to the sun. And the pictures that we used are from the Core 2A camera, which is run not by NASA, but it's run by the Naval Research Laboratory and a particular division or operation inside of the Naval Research Laboratory. The operation is called SECHI, S-E-C-C-H-I. That's who runs the Core 1A and 1B cameras and the Core 2A and 2B cameras, all right? And there is an explanation given by NASA. They have a page out there about flaws that are on the various cameras and instruments of the SOHO system. And there is a page that has this particular thing on it. And they say that this is a fiber that has found its way to the lens of the Core 2A camera. And that, you know, people are saying that it's an object near the sun, but it's really not. It's really just this fiber. Well, like I said last week when I talked about this, well, they couldn't say it was Chinese wedding candles, could they? Or weather balloons or swamp gas. This thing's out in space. So here we are, out in space, far out in space, and this camera runs into a fiber in space, and the fiber gets stuck to the lens. I got some email from people not a lot, but I got some email, and they said, look, this has already been explained. You should do better research and all that. And look, I did that research before I did those shows. I was aware that they said it was a fiber. You know, what they're doing, people that sent those emails, thank you for sending them. I'm not angry about it. Believe me, I'm not. But what you're doing is you're telling me that NASA has told us it's a fiber, and therefore we should believe it's a fiber. This is the same NASA that told us there was no atmosphere on the moon until they were forced in 1997 to finally admit there is an atmosphere on the moon. This is the same NASA that told us the moon is bone dry until just a few weeks ago, really just a few days ago, when they told us, you know what, there's water, and in fact a lot of water on the moon. That's the NASA that you want us to buy when they tell us that this is a fiber. All right, so this is the same NASA that tells us that the atmosphere on Mars is less than 1% density of what it is on Earth, and yet they plan to fly an airplane on Mars. Come on. Let's think about this a little bit. I think there's more to the story than what you may be considering, and my guest this evening is someone, I think, who would say, yeah, that's the case. There's more to this story than what people are considering. James Horak, from his home in Texas, thank you for being with us. It's good to have you back with us, James.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm happy to be back. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing quite well, sir. Thank you. Now, you've heard what I said about this fiber story, And I understand, especially old folks like me need their fiber, but I don't think this is one of them. I really, honestly don't think it is. I could be wrong about this. I leave the possibility open with every discussion that I might be wrong about what I'm saying, but I don't think it is. And James, you have provided some evidence tonight that even further solidifies me in my position that this is not a fiber on the lens of the camera. You've provided us with a video that I will share with our TV audience in just a moment. But this is not a video that you made. It's a friend of yours that did this video. Tell us about that, and who is it that provided this video?
This is a friend of mine, Shuni, at Omeda One, and he took the timed exposures that are online and made a composite of them, compiling them one by one, not changing anything. And it shows a pattern. It shows that there is a relationship between this structure and the sun, in between two massive coronal mass ejections and extreme hot spots that are breeding them. You see a channel, a low energy channel, between the structure and the sun.
You really do. It's like it turns the sun off in that spot.
Oh, it does more than that.
All right, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. But let me ask for a yes or no answer on this. I've said I don't think this is a fiber. So let me hear from James Horak. Is this a fiber on the lens of that camera?
No, and we should all know better than that to buy that story.
Well, I think so. I think so. Now, I want to go ahead and play this video for people, and we'll talk about it as it plays. But this is from the Core 2A camera, and I believe this starts on June the 1st, and it's just showing us what's going on the sun. And so far, everything here looks pretty normal, but we've just seen a massive, massive coronal mass ejection blow out of the lower left of the sun. And now we're seeing this object, which is shaped kind of like a backward C. And it's right up. Now, I use the phrase next to the sun. I understand that in space it can't be right next to the sun, but it is in close proximity to it. When I say it's up next to the sun, I'm talking about in what we're looking at on this video. We can see it very close to the sun. Now, the sun is beginning to have a blowout up in the... Oh, a massive blowout. Absolutely unbelievable, incredible massive blowout up in the about the 1 o'clock position. Another massive blowout, and now this channel is opening up, and we're seeing all kinds of white flecks. The sun is having a massive eruption, and where this fiber is, it has opened up a channel where there's not all of that massive energy coming from the sun to it. I say it has opened. A channel has opened. So we see fire. We see flames. We see this massive eruption taking place. And it's a long-term massive eruption. It's not just a blowout and then that's it. This thing is continuing. When I said that was a massive explosion, it is continuing. But where we see this backward C, this fiber, we are told, there is a channel of peace going from it to the sun, or extending from the sun to it. Another massive explosion. And one of the things, James, that I want to point out, and then we'll begin to discuss what we're looking at. We should never, if this is a fiber, on the lens. That means we're looking at the back of the fiber, and the front of the fiber is facing the sun. On the back of that fiber, we should never, ever see anything from the sun get between us and the fiber. We should never see anything get between us and the fiber. And yet in this video, we do see that fiber get momentarily occulted by some of these blasts.
Yes.
And that means it's just momentarily, it's gone from our view, and then we see the blast passes it, and then we see the backward C figure again. So if it's on the lens, we should never see anything get between us and it. We should see it at all times. But that's not what we see here. So what are we looking at here, James? What is going on here?
This is a structure that is involved with the EMVs. It
okay, now, we have a lot of new listeners every night, and they will not be familiar with your term EMV, so go ahead and explain what that is.
Electromagnetic vehicles, named such by Dr. Norman Berggren when he discovered them in the rings of Saturn.
Okay. All right. So this is associated with EMVs. Now, what I'm looking at in the video, towards the end of this video, we see it. What I'm looking at is there is some kind of bright object, obviously large, moving like a bat out of hell from the upper... We'll say between the 12 and 1 o'clock position, and it's moving at an angle down toward, and it looks like it's going to pass this backward C. But would that be an EMV coming in?
Probably. I can't see the video, but I recall it very, very vividly. There is... There are flurries of what the military call fast walkers, which are subsequent to subsiding of one beamed CME, and then a reverse to or healing of that particular hotspot, and then building of another CME hotspot. And this persists because what you're looking at are images that are taken an hour apart that are put together and show you the progress from 1 hour to the next.
Okay, and this, what you just described, has just happened on the video, and this looks like almost like snowflakes everywhere.
Those are fast walkers. Those are craft, and they are able to use the sun because that point, that we'll say fixture, is a focal point for being able to travel in through and within a portal and maintain the integrity of their matter. And that's what that does, plus a couple of other things. But the main thing that it accomplishes, it allows the EMVs to compress time.
Now, when you say it allows, you're talking about this object that's out, this backward C-shaped object that's out there?
Yes.
It allows the EMVs to compress time.
Yes. There, about 2.5 months ago, 3 months ago, there was a need for a great many EMVs in order to compress the sun because it was starting to come apart. The upper third of the sun had a fissure all the way across it, almost threatening to divide the top third of the sun from the bottom two-thirds. Then, within a short period of time, you saw a saturation of EMVs across the face of the sun so they could compress the sun to be stable.
Okay, now that's interesting, the top third of the sun. And one of the reasons that's interesting, in a couple of ancient documents, it talks about there will come a time when we will lose one-third of the sun.
You just saved that inconvenience.
Okay, so we just had a brush with the possibility of that.
Well, the important thing that I stress over and over again is that the engineering of all systems, stars with planets around them that can entertain the hope of being hospitable to complex life, are engineered and designed to accommodate that possibility. And this is not happenstance. This isn't what can happen over a period of time or any of that. It doesn't happen without help.
So you're saying, if I'm understanding, is that these are intelligent craft. We have talked about that before, but as I said, we have new listeners who didn't get in on that. These are intelligent craft. Now, when we think about these, when we think about craft, from our point of view, we nearly always think, okay, so they have to have a crew. For our new listeners, let's go over that. Do these EMVs that get around the sun, do they have a crew?
They have a, let's say they have a passenger list, but they are under guidance, but the individual is not always on them.
Okay. All right, so these are remotely controlled, so to speak.
Well, they're task driven. If they lost their pilot, they would go on about what they're doing because they don't need guidance. They're task driven and they fulfill a need which they sense.
Our audience is watching, those on the TV channel are watching now this massive blowout. And they can see this channel open that you talked about, where there is a sort of peace between the sun and this object. And, folks, I want to ask you a question. If that's a fiber on the lens, explain that channel. Explain it being right there and explain it being that size. It is the size of the open sea. We will return with Mr. James Horak in just a moment after this break.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is James Horak. And, James, when we went away, we were talking about the nature of these EMVs, and you said they're task-driven. Let's talk about that just a minute. Any idea what their task is?
Their task, of course, is multi-purpose. Basically, if you wanted to generalize, you would say they prepare systems to support complex life. In order to do that, a star is required, a fusion star, like our sun. And there need to be planets. Planets need to have moons proportionate to their own size within a range. And the environment to support an evolving life comes about only when these planets are seeded with a mineral that will cause rock to break down and fall and become an assimilable mineral. And this is part of what was going on in the rings of Saturn and around Jupiter to some extent. They take rock and lay it out in a distance around a planet so that it is exposed to rarefied atmosphere or space, and the cosmic bombardment from the sun and other stars breaks it down to where you have essential minerals in compounds that are assemblable by any tissue.
And then what do they do with this cache of broken down rock? I guess we would say it's broken down into sort of what we would call dirt or sand with minerals all in it. What do they do with that?
They bring it to a planet. The last time the Earth received a shipment, let's say, of the mineral was about 30,000 years ago. And there were humans where this was delivered, and it was delivered in Nevada. And if you go out to areas of Nevada, you will find dumps of it, small mountains and hills that have no agreement with the stratigraphy of the terrain around. They just dumped out there, and geologists have tried to portray this as skeletal life or the remains of sea creatures from the past, but they're not. This material does not conform to that. It's a silicate clay, and it has every mineral known to man, but in an efficacious form. Even the aluminum in it is assemblable, and you pass off any excess or any buildup of it in the tissues in a healthy way. You can eat it off of the ground. The Indians did when they were ill. They ate it off the ground. It will do incredible things. It's the reason right now that California produces the best wine in the world. And because the vineyards out there are using it, they're third world countries that are bidding for it, because if you have a sloped area like in Brazil where the manioc plantations are, the runoff from the torrential rains that they get seasonally takes the topsoil with it. But if you have this material, it goes down through the soil, and it works with the roots of the plants to break down the rock and build a new soil. And this will adhere more to your ground than the topsoil normally would. And I can show people the difference between plants that you give this to and plants that you don't. It is just traumatic.
All right. So why then would these EMVs be up around our sun?
Well, in conjunction with seeking a planet so that it can be fertile and vibrant, placing the moon around it to drive its core and mantle, or drive the mantle around the core, you also need management of the fusion star to maintain it, to keep it stable, to prevent the buildups, energy buildups from hot spots or solar storms, and from reaching beyond flares into coronal mass ejections that go out, don't come back, but will proceed through space, and if a planet is in the path of them, can be harmed. So these have to be tended. This energy has to be formed, and it's formed for the mutual benefit of both the planets in the system and the EMVs. So I can explain that, but and part of that is exampled by what we're discussing tonight in terms of this fixture or structure.
Okay, now what we're looking at with this structure, I mean, you know, from the pictures and from the video, there's no way that we can tell how close that is to the sun, and therefore we can't tell how big it is. But I think we can say with some assurance it's massive.
There's a way you can tell.
Okay.
If you watch as a discharge, whether it's a flare or CME, and the difference between a flare and a CME for your listeners is that a CME continues on. After it discharges, its plasma continues out and doesn't return to the sun. Now, a flare does. That's the difference. When you see it, one of these discharges go in the proximity behind the structure, that gives you a concept of distance, because you can pretty well determine by the instrument science in observers at observatories have approximated the speed of these discharges. And as this goes by at behind the fixture, the time interval will give you its distance if you know the speed or the average speed of these discharges. And if you see enough of them, they'll have varying speeds. But if you see enough of them, you can draw a mean, and then you can approximate the distance. I'll approximate the distance for you if you like.
Approximately, what is the distance from the sun?
180,000 miles.
That's pretty close.
It's pretty close.
And so, now what our viewers are seeing is there's been a massive blast from the sun aimed right at this fixture, and momentarily this fixture lit up. Okay? Now what's about to happen, folks, after this EMV flies by? There we go. Now, we cannot see the fixture, and if it was a fiber, we could. Now, it's beginning to come into view, and it's kind of shining through all of the blast of the sun there. But when that series first started, we could not see it, which we should have been able to see it if it was a fiber on the lens. Is this a solid body? Is it a spaceship? What is this?
It's solid matter. Now, you will notice that there will be changes in the disconnected portion of it. Now, it is rigid to a form, but you will see changes in these because what you're seeing there is you're seeing the birthing of new EMVs.
Now, we just had a big, huge, incredible blast, and it made the fiber disappear. Which, by the way, folks, that should have been that the color of that, if it was a fiber, should have been dark against that white blast.
Yes.
If it was a fiber. It isn't. It didn't turn dark. It disappeared in the blast, is what happened. Okay, so this is a solid object. Is it alive, James?
Well, there are elements of it that are alive, that are new life, new EMVs. Down there at the bottom, you will see an oblong series. They look like bumps. They're making that bottom tail of the fixture.
Yeah,
those are new EMVs.
Is someone there building it, or does it grow these like a living organism?
Well, it does. They start out kind of like an egg, and with enough energy, as they feed on the energy, they can grow to any size very quickly. That's where the compression of time comes in, because what you see is you see something that in a linear time span would take thousands of years, but what you're seeing is you're seeing it can happen in days. It can happen literally in days. That's the idea. You're looking at a control time machine, and that channel that you see come into it is a point in space in common with other points in space anywhere and everywhere in the universe.
I don't understand that, and you probably knew before you said it that I wouldn't understand it. So what does that mean?
That's a portal. That's a portal to anywhere, anywhere that you have the direction set of going.
Okay, so when it opens that channel, or when that channel opens, you're saying that that is a portal.
Yes, yes.
Now, we're looking at a channel that you may remember at the 1 o'clock position. There is a long-term extreme eruption, and then all of a sudden it shuts down and a channel opens there. But there's a beam of light going right through the backward sea of this object. What would that mean? Now, where this channel opened up at the 1 o'clock position, we can still see a flare not making its way off of the surface of the sun very far, and then a channel beyond it. Is that a portal?
I can't see that. If I was running anything on my computer, we might have a problem with our communication. Sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now this has started over, and people, you can see that the thing was not visible and is becoming visible. So there was something. There's something between us and it, and the something was the blast of the sun. There are also places where when the sun blast happens, you see flares kind of off of the surface of this object. In other words, it reacts to it. So how does it stay right there and not get sucked into the sun, James?
Well, now, that's a technology that's beyond describing or explaining, because what you have is...
Tell you what, we have to step away for break. But we'll pick up right there and get that answer when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back. My guest is James Horak. And James, we had to stop you right in mid-sentence as we went to break. The floor is yours.
Well, you've asked me a difficult question, because there's a lot of this I just don't want to depart. I wanted to express this back when I was young and naive in a theory that I was trying to developed called the theory of the fusion of metals. And in this theory, I'd already brought about some methods for metallurgy that are being employed today. But the full expression of this would explain how energy itself has a bioelectric source, has electricity, and that fields that are created observe their own integrity. And if you strike harmonics with these fields, that you can station them, that you can protect matter in different forms without insulation, you can create metals that have internal structures that are grain, that have such a perfect grain, they pass off heat as fast as they pick it up. And so in light of that, you might understand how things can become fixed in space and also endure waves of heat that would vaporize anything otherwise.
Okay, so this object that we have under discussion here tonight, is this object then, we've said it's solid matter, is it metal?
It's a form of metal that has received an alloy in such a way as to have this perfect grain that I was talking about, and it also inside its support structure is geometric and has the ability to pass off and focus these waves of heat coming from the sun and redirect them.
All right, now if a metal is devised that passes off heat as fast as it takes on heat, that metal would be impossible to melt, right?
Yes, yes.
So in once fact, you make it, it's done.
I proposed this. I'll tell you about the method I proposed, and this I proposed back in 1963. And this was that one day when computers could control the environment around a metal alloying furnace, both inside and immediately out, that you could introduce two pieces of metal, for instance, that you wanted to fuse together perfectly, that you could take these two pieces of metal, quickly bring them from a solid to a gas, and then introduce an alloy into these two pieces, bring them down again from a gas to a solid without going through a liquid. The alloy would not anneal out, and you would have a perfect grain. And you would have a piece of metal stronger, more durable, had a more perfect grain, and you would actually be able to throw this thing through the sun.
Okay, now the problem as I see it for us earthsiders with a piece of metal like that is once we make it, there's nothing we can do with it. We can't melt it again.
Well, there are other processes too. That's just one of the processes. It depends on what you want to do, how you want to mold it. You can mold this into something you want. If you want to develop a skin for a spaceship and you want to be able to endure a number of movements, this is accomplished by building a field that charges this skin. And this can be done with a relatively low energy source. There's so many things that you can do with this process, but it is a way of creating the metal that science here does not have. I won't complete this work because the way that the science and technology has been perverted to detrimental use for the people on this planet, I won't be part of it. And I wish other people who have the skill and ability to develop this sort of technology would understand it would be weaponized to the exclusion of being any benefit.
Okay, so what we're looking at when we look at this object is something that is constructed of metals similar to what you're talking about. That would mean somebody somewhere constructed it. Who would that be?
In the community, in the extended community, there are projects that the EMVs cooperate with ETs. and they'll bill things that are mutual benefit to both. The EMVs supply the energy and the focus. They can focus energy on any point. There's just energy that you can't imagine. And so this also ET can bring something into an area, and the EMVs will furnish it, pinpoint this. They are like they have the capacity to observe any kind of design that is in a plan, and to put that energy to that very constructive use. Something that would be on a scale that would be unthinkable by ET, they can do in a short period of time. And if it is something that requires a greater length of time than is plausible, they can compress time in that area so that it what would take a long time otherwise can take hardly any time at all.
Okay, so are you saying that this object that we're watching on the video was built by the EMVs?
It was a community effort between members of the extended community and EMVs. The EMVs made it possible, and the ETs, this is a Grand Central Station, and every star that is in a certain configuration for travel is, I kind of think of them like your coaling stations that you once had for your steam-driven ships. These are stars or coaling stations for extensive travel, and they have the capacity to enable civilizations to travel effectively and efficiently over vast spans, and that's why there's so many people, so many different civilizations and systems in the extended community. This is one thing that makes that possible.
All right, I want to go back to this idea that channel that we're looking at is a portal, because we've just witnessed a huge blowout and what looks like one huge, gigantic, circular object leaving from the sun. We'll be back right after this break, folks, so don't go away. And welcome back to the bridge of the KSS Starship. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. We will be opening up the telephone lines in just a bit, but they're not open yet. When I open them, I will tell you the telephone number, and then you can begin to call, because I know many of you will have some questions or some comments about what we've been talking about here this evening. And we want to give you the opportunity to participate in that. My guest this evening is Mr. James Horak. He's been my guest on a number of occasions and has yet to not absolutely surprise us with some things that he says. And he's already done that this evening. James, let me ask again, just to make sure that I can kind of wrap my mind around this thing that we're looking at, that NASA says is a fiber on the lens, which we can see from the video, and this video is comprised of pictures taken from the core 2A web pages, at the Naval Research Laboratory SETI site. What we're looking at, we've already seen the visual evidence that this really can't be a fiber. So let me make sure I understand. This thing is made of an alloy that sheds heat as fast as it takes heat. Therefore, it can stand the blast of the sun. And if I understand correctly, it is also operating a portal for, I suppose, EMVs as well as other space travelers to be able to enter our solar system from great distances away rather quickly. And in this video, we see a big blast and something that looks like it could be a big disc, and I mean gigantic disc, comes flying out and to the upper right of our screen. So our members who are watching, you just keep watching. You'll see that happen, and I'll try to point it out as it happens.
You're talking about the dark part of a CME, aren't you?
Yes.
That is a plasma mass.
Okay,
that
so that's
is so that... big that if you put all the planets together in our solar system, that could wrap around them like a death shroud.
Okay, so that's not a for lack of a better word, that's not a UFO.
No.
Okay.
No, that's a plasma mass. That thing will continue going out. Let's just hope that there's nothing in its way until it dissipates. Probably 10 billion miles out.
How long has this thing been up there next to the sun?
Eons.
All right, who owns it?
Ownership isn't important.
Okay, but I mean, someone has to be in charge of running it, right? Because it is technology.
It belongs to anybody who wants to use it.
Okay, so it does not require someone to run its technology.
If you're, say, for instance, you're in another part of the galaxy and you want to come here.
Okay.
Have a signature of this location in terms of a combination of gravity waves, which you put together, and it gives you a bearing. And so you enter a fusion star area, a corridor somewhere else in your proximity, and come here. And you do it within a microsecond.
So they don't have to travel beyond the speed of light in order to get here.
No, they don't. All they have to do is have a nearby star that is in this system, and it's pretty well plotted out that intelligent civilizations that have reached being membership in something like an extended community can enjoy this. It's no big deal. It's like a subway system, and only you don't pay it. You don't have to get a token. You just use it,
and you don't get mugged.
You don't get mugged. I mean, if EBs tried to use it, you know they'd end up being vaporized.
Okay, but ETs can use it.
ETs. Any ET that has that capability. If you are in the extended community, you have the capability, and you can use it.
Well, does that mean that we would potentially be able to use this?
If you were brought into the extended community, and that is a possibility that could come about in a few years if you would get your... act together, you would civilize yourself. you would get rid of the arbitrary powers that be that keep you from change, necessary change. You have to come to terms with reason and civil. It's basically a matter of morality.
Mm-hmm.
If you survive your own technology, where the technology isn't perverted to weapons and to control of people. I mean, they even on this planet, they even talk about taking people's souls. My God, how bizarre is that?
Yeah, well, they do talk about that. They certainly do. All right, I'll tell you what I want to do. You and I are going to continue talking, but I'm going to open up the telephone lines so that our audience can participate in tonight's discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to participate in this discussion tonight, there are a couple of ways to do that. One way, if you're in the USA and Canada, that's telephone, all right? It's really easy. And all you have to do is you just dial the magic numbers. And the magic numbers are 623-444-5889. Let me give it to you again, 623-444-5889. If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can call that number and it will work from anywhere in the world. But I understand that it is an international long-distance call, and that's expensive. So if you don't want to make that international long-distance call, what you can do, if you're not in the USA or Canada, you can send me a flash message. And you do that by going to my website, KevinSmithShow.com. Scroll down, you see the picture about tonight's show. Well, right above that picture is a link that says Flash Message. And that's just for you. If you're not in the USA or Canada, that's for you, because I do recognize it is expensive to make international long-distance calls. All right, let's go to the telephone. And, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, you guys. It's Jackie from Florida.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I had to mention that the theory that James was talking about with the metals, James, would that be a form of sublimation?
Well, now you're getting into alchemy. Yes, of course it would be. Of course, the alchemists weren't that far out.
Well, I know you kind of mentioned it in terms of on your blog site, and I wondered if the sublimation applied to us and the way we handle things as human beings. And now I hear you talking about your metal theory, and I thought of that.
Yeah, it's a good parallel. And you know, there's an expression, as above, so below. I think that the Alchemist Credo is something that pertains morally to the way we project reality, and I'm fond of using it. And you know, we sublimate everything that we want to feel comfortable persisting. And the idea that we can develop a technology that's favorable in all aspects, that's the ultimate sublimation in my book, my way of thinking.
Okay, well, and I also have to ask you, a friend of mine had taken a picture and gotten something in it that was an object near to the sun. So can we assume that things that we're maybe seeing in pictures that are taken from the Earth towards the sun are just like lens flares or just anomalies in our cameras as opposed to this object by the sun?
I think there are a lot of times that you can see things in the moon that are enormous, and between us and the moon, if you have the right kind of filter, you might see it between the sun. But there are things out there that are enormous, and that occasion from time to time, if you're in the right place at the right time, you'll see them.
Okay.
But the reason that's not seen more often is people on this planet are not able to see what they're unprepared to accept can be seen. It's incredulity. And it acts like a psychic block But once someone removes it for you, like taking you out and showing you a UFO and describing it for you, they've removed your psychic block for good.
Okay. Okay.
And I think you've had yours removed.
If you become a member of the community, my husband's not going to want a new GPS so he can dial in the portal, is he?
I don't know. How far does he go on his rides and walks?
Well, we've named ours Mistake. So she doesn't operate much when I'm alone in the car. But when I'm with him, he kind of likes to listen to her.
Oh, really?
I'll let you go because I know others are ready to jump in here. And I'm really glad you're on tonight, James. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thank you, Jackie. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And the lines are open. If you would like to ask a question or make a comment, James Horak is here. He is at your disposal. This is your chance. We're talking about something that a lot of people find very, very difficult to buy into. I'll tell you, folks, I don't know what this is. James is telling us what it is. I am hearing what he says. I don't disbelieve what he says. I am churning it through my few remaining gray cells, trying to figure it out. But I do know what I can say with great clarity what I think it is not. It is not, in my opinion, a fiber on the lens. It is an object up there next to the sun. Close to the sun. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
I agree with you. This is not a fiber. You made your case very well and logical on that point. The object appears to me to be three-dimensional. It's a octahedron, and I don't see it as being a backwards C. You can almost see the octahedron shape. But if this, to James, if this is a porthole, and it's there to help compress the sun, that the sun was blown away. How does that porthole difference from those on, like, terrestrial ones, where that one seems to be a point in space, but yet you have on Earth there's these portholes?
Well, there are portals and there are portals. There's the vortex portal, which is energized. You have various places where there are these vortexes, which are being driven by the military, black ops, and whatever. They're experimental, and occasionally you will see aircraft freeze in the sky in their vicinity, or you'll see something metamorph. It's just going straight down at a speed that's so slow it couldn't possibly be sustained in flight. It's slower than free fall. So you have these situations. We have one near where I live.
Let me interject here. The first time I heard James say that was on this show. And you know me. I don't believe and I don't disbelieve. I just file things away in my mind and say, well, that's something I'd like to see. And when I visited with James, I saw that. Now, you can say, now, I think Kevin's lying, or you can say, I don't think it happened, and I don't really care, because I know what I saw. I saw a plane dive towards the ground from excessive high altitude. Contrail and all, it froze in the air. And it was there for, how long was that, James? About 5 minutes?
Oh, it was there longer than that. I think we didn't stand out there all the while it was there. I've seen them stay out there until dark, you know, where it usually starts happening as the light changes at dusk. And I've taken photographs 15 minutes apart where for over 2 hours one wouldn't progress 15 linear or 15 horizontal degrees. And then it metamorphed, a plane with a fuselage, tail section, wings, and a jet trail, a contrail, actually going that slow, and then metamorph into a classic UFO. And I put those shots on a website online about 11 years ago, and nobody wanted to discuss them. And you see, I took those on film and have the negatives to this day.
As a matter of fact, I know that to be true, too, because you showed those to me. So anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted, but Jerome, did you have another question or comment?
Yes. You mentioned, James, 30,000 years ago, there was deposited this mineral in Nevada, I believe you said.
Yes.
What was that actually called again?
One of the people that sell this mineral sell it under a trademark name, Accelerite. And I know those people, and they just sent me a bunch of it. It is a very utilitarian mineral. You can use it on anything. You can eat it. And it has all kinds of benefits.
Could you spell that name for me?
Sure. Excelerite.
Thank you, James. You're a very interesting guest. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
All right.
Jerome.
Thanks, Jerome. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. That's the number. It's a magic number. If you press those numbers on a magic device called a telephone, you press them in that order, it will transport you from where you are to right here. Our own version of a portal. And here's someone coming through the portal right now. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, James.
Hello, Rusty.
Yeah, I like to. Can you expound more? You was talking about having your eyes open, so to speak, which kind of reminded me of a Bible thing with Elijah and Elisha. How does a person? I've not seen a UFO or EMV or anything of such nature. How do you go about getting this done?
Well, if you believe in that possibility, you've removed it yourself. It's people, and you see it all the time, Rusty. You see people that cannot allow themselves to believe or even consider the possibility that this could exist. They'll blind themselves. It's incredulity. They create their own psychic block. Now, this can be enhanced. This can be enhanced through psychotronics. It can be enhanced through a form of trance. But, you know, you see reality if you're prepared to see it.
Okay. Now, so is the sun going to burn out like the scientists are saying, or is it a body that seems like you're saying that it's being kept alive artificially, the sun? So is
yes.
It like, is it going to go
yes.
on forever?
They know that there is no explaining. On the basis of the conservation of energy, they know there is no explaining how a star can burn for billions of years. There's just no explanation. But if you understand that this energy is farmed and managed, and that the source of the energy is controlled through helium, then you begin to realize that this is a controlled burn, and that when needed, you feel new fuel is provided.
So, what is the? I guess I'm not looking for a being, but what Kevin kind of asked what's controlling them, and you said anyone can use them. And you said the EMVs were made eons ago. Was there ever a beginning then?
That's a good question. I wish I could answer it. That would be like being able to see the face of God, though. That's just not possible.
Okay.
There's always someone or something that's higher than people, civilizations that reach the highest level of manifestation, that's spiritual technology. They reach that. I doubt very seriously that any of them ever come close to knowing with any degree of certainty what God is, what this design is, this design that is all-encompassing and so wonderful to contemplate. But that's the point. Nobody overcomes it. Nobody that's got a warfaring agenda, that's got a conquest agenda or whatever. And that's the point of what we're seeing in the sun today. This should reduce mankind to some degree of humility. We talk about these space fleets that our scientists and black ops have and all this crap, and that we're about to go to war with ET and all that. When you see something like you're seeing in the sun, it just doesn't jive with the science fiction, does it?
No, it doesn't. Alrighty, that's my question. Thank you.
Alright, thank you very much. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number, the combination for your own portal from where you are to right here where I am is 623-444-5889. Again, 623-444-5889. Mark in New Zealand has sent us a flash message, and I just want to give you a heads up, Mark. We're going to take your flash message first up when we come back from break, but we're only about 30 seconds away from break, so I'm going to hold off until we get back from break, and when we do, we're going to take your flash message. All right? And, caller, are you willing to hang on through this next break?
Yes.
All right. You hang on through the next break. When we come back from break, we're going to take the flash message, and then you're up. My guest this evening is Mr. James Horak. Always amazing information and quite an amazing individual. You may agree, you may disagree, but you can't sit on the sidelines when he's on the field, that's for sure. My friends, we will return right after this.
Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. When a topic in history or science or the paranormal is too outré or controversial for conventional media, where can we go for information? To the Kevin Smith Show, of course. I'm a big fan.
And we are back. Caller, hang in there with us. We'll get to you in just a moment. My guest this evening is James Horak. And, James, we have a flash message. It's a little bit off topic, but very interesting. And this is from Mark in New Zealand. He says, could you please ask James the origin of his surname? And then he goes on to explain. He says he wants to know if it's related to the Egyptian Horakhte, which is an aspect of the Egyptian sun god Re Horakhte, or Horus. So, what about that?
I wouldn't know. That would infer some intent. I don't know a lot about my family because my mother and father didn't stay together very long, sadly, and I only met my father just before I went into the Navy when I was 17 years old.
Okay.
Fair enough. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Tom from Brooklyn.
Okay, Tom.
Hi. I don't believe in coincidences very easily. And since these things are eons old, there's got to be a reason why they're becoming prominent now. Without too much speculation.
Oh, yes. Very good. Very good. I was really hoping someone would bring that up.
Okay. What's the reason they're becoming prominent now?
It's not that they're becoming prominent. It's that they're being revealed. They are showing you what they've known all along was there. And there's got to be a reason for it. Because they know that filament on the lens story isn't going to wash.
Right. Well, clearly people besides yourself and those akin to you know about this. But so how come it's filtering to a broader consciousness and it seems to be converging with all these other threads?
Well, I would suggest this. I would suggest that there's some people that are wising up that all these secular science that they have chucked back in here and there, you know, suppressed actually to compartmentalization, security classification, and over-specialization are not getting the job done. They want to throw it out to a broader observation by different people because they want to know what other people think about it and what other people might know. They suddenly are getting smart. That's one possibility. I know for sure that the FBI has financed movies that have opened the floodgate for comments from the public, like Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me is one of them.
Huh. Okay. Well, as Kevin said not too long ago, scientific method is based on scientific materialism, that theory. And maybe there are some competing ones out there.
Well, I would hope. I would hope that there was a broader view taken because the brightest and the best are not necessarily the ones that get educated. They get self-educated.
Yeah, it's diploma mills are maleducation.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
Okay, thank you for your insight.
All right, Tom, thank you for the call.
I really appreciate that question.
I think it's an excellent question.
Yes.
Why now? Why are we suddenly beginning to see these things? James, let me throw something into the mix of that answer and see what you think about it. I wrote an article about this, and I put it on my Facebook page. People are sending me emails, and this has been going on, for the last year or so. I mean, I get emails from people around the world, and there are a handful of those every week where people say, you know, I can just sense there's something big about to happen. And here's what I said. I said, if all of these folks from around the world are beginning to say, I sense that something big is about to happen, then something big is already happening, and that is people are waking up and being able to sense that.
Yes.
So something big is already happening.
We are becoming more, you know, we're becoming more than a separate peoples. We are developing a sense of belonging to a larger and more open community, a community that recognizes value to thought like it never has before. The New World Order is not succeeding. It doesn't have anything that sane people want. You know, there are a lot of people that want to preserve their their national flavor, whatever, that doesn't in any way need to hamper this growing common awareness, this growing common consciousness. It doesn't need to hamper that at all. And the New World Order wants to suppress it from both ends. So the New World Order is not succeeding in selling itself. And, you know, they have been counting on this hostile alien thesis, which I like to attack with common sense.
Go ahead and attack it with common sense. Let's hear it.
Well, I mean, what you're seeing in the sun right now, is if that were weaponized, what would these minions on Earth have to compete with it? Nothing. So it's just like saying, well, let's go out and throw rocks at the conquistadors.
Yeah, I can see that. I can. Pardon me. Now, we have a flash message from Stephen in the United Kingdom. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And caller, if you'll hang on just a moment, we're going to take this from Stephen in the United Kingdom. Hi, Kevin. Please, can you ask James if he knows of the coming of Christ? There's someone called Lord Rael, and he is claiming to be Christ.
Well, there has to be something for the superstitious. And, you know, I noticed that a gentleman that you've had on before that is a proponent of Sitchin.
Yeah, but don't name any names. Let's don't identify that person.
Oh, I won't.
Okay.
I won't. But he has spoken out against this Lord El Rey. And or Lord El Ra, and which surprised me, because this individual places this value on gold, supposedly like the Anunnaki. All of this is superstition and myth, and it. You know, you're having this conflict within the take of this, which is typical. But you know, you have religions and followings and cults spring up over a lot less. So you're going to have an element of this, and it's a shame. I hate to see it, because it isn't obtaining more clarity. It's going the other way.
Well, another thing, and Stephen, you need to think about this. Ray, R-A, Ray, is Egyptian. El is the Hebrew word for God. However, they got it from the Canaanites. The Canaanites had a god named El. So this is not the same person. And it's not just two different names for the same person. So I think the juxtaposition of the two names pretty much says this is fraudulent. All right, to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is David from Rocky Face, Georgia.
Hello, David.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, finish your theory there. I think that we should all keep in mind on all thesis that Ted Connors has been investigating. But I wanted to also let you know that be careful when you talk about unidentified aerial phenomenon. My life has changed drastically.
Okay. Elaborate on that a little bit.
All right. My girlfriend of 16 years told me that she felt I was too much interested in the alien phenomenon.
Okay.
7 months later, I came down with cervical stenosis, and I've had to have a $30,000 surgery.
Uh-huh.
2 days after that, a windstorm hit my house that caused $6,000 in damages. And my employers are thinking about letting me go now because I'm inability to do my job. But I just want you all to know that possibly whatever goes around does come around. And be careful how you play it.
Okay.
I called you once before and set you up with Alvon Ward.
All right. All right. I remember that. I certainly do. Well, David, I appreciate you calling.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. I'm a little bit at a loss to understand the meaning and impact of that. Do you have any input, James?
Someone that I know and think highly of recently went through adversities in a form of psychic attacks, even that harmed them greatly. And the work that is done on people that have experiences that are outside the immediate credibility of neighbors and people around them and so forth, they suffer for it, and it is a shame, but it's one reason why you never see disclosure in this country, because of the criminal acts that have been committed against witnesses, abductees, contactees, when they try to find some resolution outside their immediate experience. They're beset by creatures that are planted, put in place to do that. And it's criminal. And that may have happened to this gentleman. That may be what his concern is. And if it is, I sympathize with him. He doesn't... there's no justice coming to him, and I sympathize greatly with him.
All right. We have a break up on us. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and take that call. We have a flash message from Ross in the United Kingdom, and we'll have that right after this break as well. We shall return, ladies and gentlemen, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest this evening, Mr. James Horak. Let's go straight to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. James, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
How y'all tonight?
Good.
It's good to hear you.
First of all, let me say peace and blessings unto David in Rocky Face, Georgia. I know where that is. That's where my brother and his family lived until he died on January the 4th of 2010. So he may have known my brother.
Okay, we're just about out of time, Mike, so you're going to have to get on with your question or comment for James.
Okay, James, I've been at this for 57 years. In that 57 years, I've been almost compelled to do this, like I was being... negotiated by somebody else, like I'm a puppet. But yet I'm not given the satisfaction of physically being able to take the blinders off. What would cause that?
Well, to some extent, I think people have to step out of their skin from time to time. I imagine that you do that, Mike. I've talked with you. As a matter of fact, you were the only person after this show that that Kevin did on this object to guess that it could be related to the EMVs. So you definitely have the imagination, the capacity, and the knowledge.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do is make Kevin a video which shows me standing outside with my binoculars and camcorder and all this and looking for aliens, and then have my grandchildren standing behind me dressed as grays, and then I'd be wearing a binocular with my and wearing a blindfold saying, I can't see them, Kevin.
That'll
do
be
that
good.
Do that on Halloween.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Kevin might like that idea.
Yeah, I do. You make that video and send it along, and we'll put it out there and let people see it. Micah,
good.
I appreciate the call. I have to move on because I got to get to this flash message before we run out of time. But thanks again. All right, we have a flash message from Ross in the United Kingdom. James, does the Planet X scenario exist that previous KSS guests have described?
Well, they've known there was another planet, and astrophysicists decided a number of years ago, 50 years ago, that it was a debris field now, that it had been destroyed. And there is a debris field, and that's where a lot of the meteors and asteroids come from that visit us from time to time. It appears that in the last 30 years that it's been amassing so that it gives a more pronounced reading, but maybe it'll form something that will be more formidable.
Well, is this debris field, as I understand what you say, it once was a planet, has been destroyed, is a debris field now. Is this debris field coming in toward the Earth? Is it moving as sort of a coherent mass of junk?
No. No, I think that the material is being gathered up and may end up being part of something else, but I think that there is a design in what's happening with it, and I don't think it'll be destructive in any way to any of the planets, and its matter might be utilized constructively for something. I would hate to make a prediction about it, but it's there.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right. Let's take a quick call, and this will be our last call of the evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin and James. This is Larry from Illinois.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
And just an observation that it looks like, if you're looking at the picture, the object is about half the diameter of the distance from the center of the sun, which would make the object about a half a million miles away. And if that's true, then that thing is some huge object.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is a huge object.
I think Kevin came pretty close when he estimated it to be about a quarter the circumference of the sun.
Yeah, it is... It's big, and I'm just guessing, and, you know, the image on the screen is not a size that's a quarter of the circumference of the sun. But allowing for what we think its distance from the sun might be, if you brought it right up next to the sun, I mean literally next to the sun, I think it would its apparent size would increase to about a quarter of the circumference of the sun. That's my guess. But it's just a guess, and I am not an astronomer. I'm not a fiber expert either.
But you wear more suits than I do, Kevin.
I do know cameras pretty well, and I know if you've got something on the lens that is showing up in the video, it shows up superimposed up on all of the images that you are taking. It doesn't disappear when something, in other words, if it's on the lens, nothing can pass between it and the lens.
Yeah.
So if something does pass between it and the lens, it's not on the lens. That much I know. That much I know. And I as I say, I'm not an expert at much of anything. But I'm also not stupid, and neither are you, ladies and gentlemen. That's the point. The point is that we get fed such lines of malarkey all the time. If you stop and analyze them, what they're trying to tell you is they're trying to convince you you're stupid and we're not. We're the experts, and we're telling you what this is. Forget about what your lying eyes are telling you. You listen to us because you're stupid and we're not. And your eyes are wrong 100% of the time. I reject that. I reject it with every ounce of energy that's in me, out of every cell of my body, every ounce of energy in every cell of my body. I reject that. We are not stupid. You are not stupid. You're not blind, and your eyes are not lying to you 100% of the time. Generally, when you see a cow, it is a cow, and it is not a basketball. Generally, that's going to be the case, like 99.999 to infinity percent. There's always a possibility of an optical illusion. But those are exceptions. Those are great exceptions. They don't happen much. But it's not an optical illusion when I see something pass between an object and the lens. When I see that happen, I know that whatever that object is, it's not on that lens. So whatever this object is, and perhaps it is exactly what Mr. Horak has described for us here this evening, whatever that object is, I don't think it's on the lens. And I think there's this video that I've been showing on our TV channel, I think, provides ample proof of that. It's not on the lens. James, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, and you always say things that are immensely interesting and intensely controversial.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's my pleasure.
Do you lay awake nights trying to think of controversial things to say?
Yeah, I sure do. At least my mother used to think so.
James, if you will, I want you to stay on the telephone with me for just a moment, and I'll chat with you after the show. All right, folks, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening, and I hope you'll be back with us tomorrow evening when we'll be Open Line Live, BYOT, bring your own topic. We'll talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. We don't have to talk about what I want to talk about, okay? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.